Well, hello, Wisconsin. Welcome to the Paul Revere Show. This is attorney Mark Thompson. We are here every Monday night, 7 o'clock, WAUK Radio, 540 AM, 101.92.7 FM. It is a beautiful day here in Waukesha. It is sunny. It is primetime summertime. And we are here, and we've been talking about democracy in our state. And I'm honored and privileged this evening to have Sarah Rodriguez with me. Hello, Sarah.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Sarah is currently the rep for the 13th Assembly District. And she is in the middle of a hunt for the lieutenant governor's race.
That's right.
So why don't you just tell listeners a little bit about who you are, and then I'll ask you why you would want to run for lieutenant governor.
So I am a long-term resident of Waukesha County. I grew up here. I went to Brookfield East High School. Ran away a little bit for college and grad school, was in the Peace Corps, but, you know, Wisconsin calls you back. I came back to Wisconsin to raise my kids here, and that's what I'm doing. I've got married with two kids, 13 and 15, so there is a lot of eye rolling in my house. But prior to being in the Assembly, I was a healthcare executive, managed large teams, multi-million dollar budgets. You know, believe I can be a really good partner to Governor Evers in something as large and complicated as the Wisconsin state government. But, you know, for much of my career, I was a public health nurse. And that's the lens that I'd like to bring to the lieutenant governor's role. And it's one of investment in our kids and communities and one of prevention.
So my sister's a nurse. And my mother-in-law, when she was living, was a nurse. So crucial people taking care of us, making the medicine work, actually keeps most things running and in between doctor visits. So why politics to begin with?
So, you know, I ran for my assembly seat. I was honestly angry at the Republican response to COVID. With that spring election, where I believe they put politics before people's lives and made sure that we had an election in person when we didn't have all the facts and information about COVID at the time. And my background, I worked for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. I was an epidemic intelligence service officer. So I did national and international outbreak investigations. And I knew that when I was speaking to people within my district, they wanted a different perspective from their representative. And I felt like I could be that person to bring more healthcare, more science, more data-driven decisions to the legislature.
So tell us a little bit about your time in the legislature.
Yeah, so
what, you brought all that energy. What happened?
So, you know, it is exhilarating and it's frustrating being in the legislature. I am so grateful and humbled that the folks within my district chose me to represent them. And I was able to work with a lot of my colleagues on healthcare legislation when I was there. I co-authored the expansion for Badger Care within the state that would have saved the state $640 million and brought another $2 billion that we could have invested within our infrastructure here and within healthcare in our communities. And we couldn't even get a hearing on that. And that's what was frustrating within the assembly and within the legislature, is that what I hear consistently from constituents is they want us to work together. They want us to be able to move things forward and do what's best for Wisconsinites. And that is not always happening in the legislature today. And we need to get beyond this hyper-partisanship nature and really do what's best for Wisconsin.
So with that lens, why the lieutenant governor, and what can that office do to help us create this livable place that you want us to be in?
Right.
Right. In other words, what are we for?
Right. What are we for? What are we for? So, you know, I want to be the lieutenant governor for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's a bigger microphone. And there are things that I know the vast majority of people within Wisconsin care about. And we need to be able to create legislation and create programs that really address those needs. So when I talk to folks within the community all across the state, they absolutely love their public education system. They love their public schools. We need to fully fund those public schools. And that's what Governor Evers has really been trying to do with his budget, with all of the other areas that he's invested within Wisconsin. He is really trying to make sure that we have one of the best public school systems within the country. The other area that I talk to folks about is healthcare, and it's an area that I know quite well. And people are really wanting to make sure that they have accessible and affordable care. And even people who would say call themselves middle class. You know, sometimes the healthcare that they have today, their deductibles are so high, it's very difficult sometimes to get the care that they need. And those are kind of areas that I think we have a lot of common ground on. We want to invest in our communities. We want to have safe communities. And we want to make sure that we are putting policies and programs out there that invest in everyone in Wisconsin.
So when's the election?
So the primary election is August 9th. That's coming up in 3 weeks. It is moving fast. I'm very excited and slightly terrified, but I think it's going to go great. And then, of course, the election is on November 8th.
So as you look down the next 3 weeks, when you're out talking to people, what do they say to you? Do they ask you, what does a lieutenant governor do?
They do. People are not always sure what the lieutenant governor does. And what I think is really great about Governor Evers is that the lieutenant governor's role is really honestly what you can make it. So what skills and other types of abilities that you bring to the table, you can really carve out an appropriate role for that lieutenant governor. And Governor Evers, with the current lieutenant governor, Barnes, has been able to work with him to make sure that he can focus on things that he was passionate about. So one of the areas that Lieutenant Governor Barnes continues to focus on is green energy within Wisconsin, as well as environmental issues. I want to make sure that I can continue that fantastic work that he's doing. You know, there are other areas that I would work with Governor Evers on in terms of healthcare. I'd like to be able to work on additional areas within healthcare. And lastly, honestly, entrepreneurship in the state of Wisconsin. So we have one of the lowest rates of opening up small businesses across the country. And I think that's an area where we can get some bipartisan support to be able to really support that lifeblood of small towns and areas like Waukesha, is those small businesses that we are able to make sure that when we are spending our money there, that's going to pay for, their daughter's dance lessons. You know, that's going to pay for their son to make sure that he can get his swimming lessons in. That's the kind of area that I want to make sure we're investing in Wisconsin, is those small businesses that really are the heartbeat of our communities.
So what do you think it has been that has sort of limited that creation of businesses?
You know, I think it's interesting. So I have a small business myself that I opened up a couple of years ago. And when I put my business plan together, one of the biggest expenses and one of the expenses that I found the scariest when really thinking about opening that business was healthcare. And so when you leave a standard job, you know, you're going to have to figure out how you pay for healthcare for your family. And so making sure that we have an area where we can invest in those small businesses, particularly in communities that may not have always had the investment in the past, access to capital to be able to start those businesses. I think there are areas where we can make sure that people who have a really good idea are able to implement on that idea so that we can continue to make sure that our economy grows here in Wisconsin.
So in your capacity as a current rep, mm-hmm. how have you used that job within your district, right? All of Waukesha and then Western Milwaukee County, right?
So my district today, now the lines have changed with the new redistricting. My district today includes parts of Brookfield, Elm Grove, parts of West Allis, and parts of Wauwatosa, and about five wards in Milwaukee. So that's the district as it exists today. In terms of how I've used my position as, as an assemblywoman to make sure that we're promoting what's going on within this particular district, I have visited a lot of businesses within the district just to see how things are going. There's a lot of restaurants in my district as well. And I reach out to my constituents all the time. They email me, they call me, I give them a call back. And there are many times where my ideas for legislation come from my constituents themselves. And so there's pieces of legislation that we're working on today that I get as ideas from my constituents. And that's honestly fantastic. That's the way that it should work, is somebody identifies a problem, they bring it to their leader, their legislator, and we see if there's a legislative solution to that problem or if there's other ways that we can be helpful.
So in terms of, you're going from one little district mm-hmm. to statewide, right?
Yeah.
So how do you then take that message out? What have you been doing?
So we have been going all over the state. We have been speaking to people all over the state. In terms of my campaign, we have over 60 endorsements. That includes over 2/3 of the state. So it's not just Madison, it's not just Milwaukee, but it's all across the state of Wisconsin. So there's broad support for what we're doing here. That includes rural areas, suburban areas, and urban areas. So I am going to listen to see what these folks need, because I do believe that communities are able to best identify the issues that they're having within their communities and best identify possible solutions for those communities. So we have been all across the state talking to folks.
We're going to be coming up on a break here in a minute. So in 30 seconds, tee up the next, like, why Sarah?
Why Sarah? Oh, that's okay. Great. I love it.
Why,
I love it.
Sarah?
Why Sarah? So here's why Sarah. So I'm a current sitting legislator today.
Right. You got 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
And then we'll come back on break and then we'll elaborate.
Okay, so that's good. Current sitting legislator, executive experience, and I'm a full-time working mom. You want to do something like that? You give it to a full-time working mom, she'll be successful at it.
I can't argue with that. I cannot argue with that. But for women, there would be no world, period. And as we all know, women take care of all the details of daily living. We'll be right back, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. I am here with Sarah Rodriguez, and we will be back after the break with more. Welcome back, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. This is WAUK 540 AM, live from downtown Waukesha on this beautiful summer night. I am privileged to have with me Sarah Rodriguez, the rep from District 13, who now has the ambition to become the lieutenant governor for the great state of Wisconsin, to keep us moving forward. Welcome back, Sarah. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
So, we were talking about how important women are, and you said it. You're a working mom, and mm-hmm. working women have carried so much of everything mm-hmm. in the state. So what is it about coming as a working mom, as a nurse with experience in the assembly, what does that bring to your job as lieutenant governor? What do you think?
Well, I think that diverse perspectives are important. And one of the areas that sometimes gets overlooked when we talk about either job creation or we talk about really revving up the economy is childcare. And oftentimes when we have different perspectives in the room, such as myself, who's a full-time working mom, my kids are a little older now. They're 13 and 15, so we're not doing childcare anymore. But I remember that dance. I remember having to go back and forth with making sure that we were picking them up on time and dropping them off and getting to work on time. And having reliable, affordable childcare was one of the reasons that I was able to be successful professionally. And I think everybody should have that opportunity. And so when you have different perspectives in the room, those types of conversations can be had. And that's why I want to bring my perspective to the Lieutenant Governor's role, which is one of somebody who has worked full-time the entire time I've had kids. Number two, I've been in executive positions. I can bring that perspective with me within this office. And being a sitting legislator, understanding how policy works. I think those are really important as we move forward, that those perspectives are really shown within that Lieutenant Governor's role.
So I really miss an opportunity here if I didn't ask you, you know, with the U.S. Supreme Court's decision recently with Dobbs and overruling Roe, what do you hear from women, families around the state, and how does that play out in terms of this race in particular?
You know, I live in Waukesha County, okay, and
yeah, I think that's really important.
Yeah.
Right? The state is purple.
Right.
And Waukesha is pretty, it's purple.
Red. Waukesha County, I would say, is pink at least.
It is. But I mean, there are a lot of independents. There are a lot of Democrats in Waukesha County.
There are tons.
Okay. And I mean, that, frankly, I think there's a lot of moderate Republicans that are like, I don't think necessarily infatuated with Trump and the craziness he took us to, right?
Right.
So, and I don't know, I think there are a lot of moderate Republicans. I went to law school with a lot of them who they thought Roe was pretty settled law and women had equal rights or, not equal pay, but, right?
Yeah.
Equal rights. So how is that playing out?
So in my conversations, particularly with women, and again, I live in Waukesha County, so I live in a suburban area, which has traditionally been Republican, but I can tell you that my conversations are changing. There are folks who may have voted for Republicans in the past, but they absolutely do not agree with overturning of Roe versus Wade and the 1849 law that we have on the books in Wisconsin. Now, let me repeat that. 1849, that means women didn't have the right to vote at that point in time. We had barely become a state at that point in time. And we're going to have to implement a law. And I'm a nurse myself. Medicine has changed since 1849. And for our clinicians...
You think?
Yeah, it has, shockingly. Our clinicians having to try to interpret this 1849 law is really dangerous. It's dangerous to women. It's dangerous to women's health. And when I talk to my old colleagues, nurses and physicians, it is already affecting how people are delivering care today in Wisconsin. And abortion is healthcare, full stop. Full stop. And as Lieutenant Governor, I will tell you, I will fight like hell to make sure that people, all Wisconsinites, are able to make their own healthcare decisions and there are not politicians or judges in that exam room with their doctor.
Yeah, it's really sort of remarkable, especially when you think about it. There was at one point in time the Conservative Party that said politicians should stay out of people's personal lives, and that somehow we flip full circle.
Right.
You know? I mean, Justice Blackmun was pretty Republican, right? And he wrote it. So, what are the other, I mean, you've talked about good living, good schools, quality health care, maintaining and developing meaningful equality for women. What else?
You know, people have been talking about the economy. You know, we want to make sure that we continue on the path that we're going on. Governor Evers has been the number one governor to get the most money out to small businesses from the COVID funds that we received, which is fantastic, and was really quite quickly he got those COVID funds out to those small businesses. And so they want us to continue. We have one of the lowest unemployment rates in Wisconsin, and they want us to continue to move forward on that. Business owners do talk to me about they're still struggling to find workers. And I know that often if you go to a restaurant today or if you're going to any other place, they are short staffed sometimes. And so that is that's difficult for small businesses, but it's good for the Wisconsin economy that we've got a really, really low unemployment rate here. And so those are the kind of things people are talking to me about. They just want to make sure that Wisconsin continues to go on a positive pathway, that the leadership understands what's happening at the kitchen table for most of folks. And that really is, they're talking about their jobs, they're talking about school, and they're talking about healthcare. And those are the three areas that I think we should be focused on.
So we're coming up to the break, Sarah. 40 seconds, 30 seconds. This is your final shout out, right? What do you have to say to voters and listeners, and why, Sarah?
All right, so the election is August 9th. We have to do everything we can to make sure that Governor Evers is reelected. And that means he's gonna need a strong partner on that ticket with him. Somebody who understands what it takes to win in a difficult district, a purple district. I flipped that district from red to blue, and understands how legislation and executive functioning works. And that's me. And so what I would ask people to do is, if you haven't requested your ballot today, if you want to vote absentee, go ahead and do that. If not, make sure you are circling in for Sarah Rodriguez on August 9th.
There you go. Thank you so much, Sarah. We'll be right back on the break. This is the Paul Revere Show. Welcome back. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is the Paul Revere Show. We are here every Monday night from 7 to 8 o'clock. Sarah Rodriguez, running for Lieutenant Governor, was here the first half of the show. And I'm really privileged to have a younger woman, Lauren Yoder, with me for the second half of the show. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, how's it going?
That's great. So, Lauren is active with Blue Sky Waukesha.
Yes.
So, first of all, tell us a little bit about Blue Sky Waukesha.
Yeah, so Blue Sky Waukesha is Waukesha County's nonpartisan but more progressive organization that works on civic engagement and education and a lot of community outreach. Our primary goal is just to make sure that voters here in Waukesha County are informed when they go to the ballot box, but also informed how to get involved in their community about issues that really matter to them. So I'm really excited to be doing this work with them through this election cycle, and I can't wait to do a bit more.
And I'm really excited to have you here because, you know, we have Sarah Rodriguez, one of the candidates running for lieutenant governor. But democracy only works if people vote. And Actually, democracy has no future if young people don't weigh in and tell us, frankly, older folks, you know, what they're thinking.
Yeah.
So you work with young voters.
Yes.
On behalf of Blue Sky, right?
Yeah, I work with everyone, but as a young person, it's a bit easier for me to connect with other young people, obviously. So that's kind of become more of my focus.
That's good. So you can help me connect with you so we connect. Okay. So what is the focus of voter engagement towards young people in Waukesha and Blue Sky? And what do you bring to that job?
Yeah. So, I mean, the main purpose of my job is just to make sure that young people are as informed as possible, because high schools I know for sure I went to Waukesha West. I know a lot of other Waukesha high schools really don't do much in terms of preparing their students to go out and be voters, be engaged in their communities. And so where we come in is we're making sure that these, you know, these usually high school seniors are registering to vote. They know how and where and when they can do that. You know, things are constantly changing. They know how they can vote, you know, in-person absentee, mail-in absentee, you know, in person the day of, because these things are confusing when nobody tells you what to do. And you can find the information online, but it gets a bit convoluted at times. And so we're really using social media as the biggest tool. That's where I come in to really target young people and kind of give them the tools that they need and that they can pass on then to other people that they know to make sure that we're turning out as many young people as we can for the two upcoming elections.
So just in terms of, you talk about social media,
yeah,
and young folks using social media. Do any young people listen to the radio?
That's an excellent question, and I did question, you know, how well this would work with me here, given the fact that most young people don't have radios that work. But I think that it's still important to be here and speaking about this, even if they might not necessarily hear
so
about it.
So it is a podcast.
Yes.
So do young people listen to podcasts?
Yes. So this will end up being shared on all of our social media because that's the one way that they will access things.
And I think that's right. So because it is really a different way of communicating, mm-hmm, right?
And very much so.
So right now, where are young people focused, right?
Yeah, young people, and I've found this a lot because I've worked both in partisan and nonpartisan settings. Young people are almost always focused on the issues that affect them the most. And right now, obviously, if you were listening before with Sarah Rodriguez talking about Roe v. Wade being overturned, you know, reproductive health is really, really important for young people to be talking about because, you know, we're all at an age where that's, you know, a pretty big determining factor for our futures. And if we don't have a say in, you know, when we have children, that's a really big deal. And so issues like that are turning people out. Things like climate change are going to be turning young people out. That's a really big focus because, you know, people talk about, we want the planet to be livable for our grandchildren. Well, we want the planet to be livable for ourselves still. And that is something that seems to be actively attacked. Things like gun violence are exceptionally important. It seems like every day there's another shooting. We are the generation that grew up doing school shooter drills. And when there are active shooter situations, you see young people guiding their parents because they were taught how to do this in school. Like, that's not what an education should be for. Young people are also really, really focused on the fact that we don't know whether or not we'll be able to afford housing. Like, it's a common joke on social media saying, you know, posting pictures of houses and saying that you'll never be able to afford to live there. But it's a joke that's rooted in a bit of truth because we have stagnant wages, the cost of housing is out of control, and there's just kind of this bit of lack of hope for the future. So, yeah, I'm that downer now.
I think those are very, very powerful things to say, right? Because it reflects who we are as a people, right? I mean, America to me has always been about the future and our children and their children.
Yeah.
That's the hope, right? So I've had a pretty good run. But what is it about politics today? And politicians, and not just Sarah, everybody, what do they have to really pay attention to in terms of addressing and getting young people involved?
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing is young people are kind of sick of voting against something, but that's the message that's constantly pitched. You know, it's like in 2020, it was, well, you just have to vote against Trump. That's it. You have to vote against him. But there was no, you have to vote for Biden. You know, there's this promise for you. And that is not exclusive to that race. That's just a much larger scale one. I just know that when I talk to my friends, I don't know anyone who ever says, I'm really excited to vote for this candidate. No, they're really, they just know they need to vote against a candidate. And so I think the biggest thing is just appealing to young people because you truly care about what they want and need, and not, because I think we can kind of see through a lot of the promises that are made because we've been disappointed so many times when these grand promises are made and then we're let down. And that a big part of that, you know, fixing that comes with actually communicating with young people about their needs and not just assuming what they need, or just having, like, using talking points.
So in terms of young people in mm-hmm. Waukesha,
yeah,
where do you think, you know, folks that are going to be 18 on the primary or 18 in November, mm-hmm. 18 and 20 in 2024, what do you think they're thinking in terms of, like, making things happen?
Excellent question. I think on an individual level, I think young people have felt for a while now kind of hopeless and lost, at least in the, you know, towards how the government has been functioning, how their elected officials have been functioning. However, I think there's been a lot of organizing from young people. I mean, we've seen it for years now, outside of politics, organizing outside of politics. I mean, look at the protest movements that have come from young people in the last, even like 3 or 4 years. They've been absolutely incredible. And then those issues make it into the mainstream political spheres, you know? So I think just keeping having the understanding that they can still create change, but they don't necessarily have to work within, you know, these structures that they might not find to be the most effective for them. And keeping that reminder out there, like, voting is a very important thing to do, obviously, and that is, you know, like, one thing that you can do, but there are so many other opportunities that they have to get involved and actually create real change and really put pressure on elected officials who may be ignoring them otherwise.
So how do you see developing different types of organization or organizational structures for young people to get that done, right? When I was young, I was like, okay, you know, it's your world now, it's mine tomorrow, we're gonna mm-hmm. take it. Do you sense that attitude with your generation? Like, okay, it's almost ours, we're gonna take it.
Yeah, I do. I think a lot of that comes from, I mean, like I've said, just feeling like nobody's really getting anything done. And so it's not even like, it's currently your world and it will be ours. It's more like, okay, you're not doing anything. You need to step aside and let people do things who will actually make change. And that's where this, you know, putting pressure on elected officials and, you know, because there are, you know, age restrictions for when you can actually run for, like, Congress and Senate, people can't necessarily run for those offices this young. And a lot of other offices are dominated, you know, by incumbents who have been in that position for 15, 20 years, and so those aren't exactly seats that they can take. But getting involved in these larger protest movements or even organizations that they find, like, on social media are really good ways for them to get involved and kind of take the reins a little bit earlier than they might have otherwise.
So how do you see young people in Waukesha County actually doing that?
Yeah, I mean, there was just a really cool protest, I think it was in Menominee Falls, with a group of recent high school graduates there protesting what had happened, you know, with the Dobbs ruling, with overturning Roe v. Wade. So it was organized by these recent graduates, and, like, they're out there and they're saying that they really want to do things and make their voices heard and that they are sick and tired of how things have been going. And I know as well, there were so many young people that turned out to the protests immediately following the overturning of Dobbs. There were a lot of young people turning out at the Black Lives Matter protests in Waukesha when those were happening in 2020. So, they are here. They are frustrated. They want to get involved, but I think there's also they've seen kind of a lack of structure for them to be able to do that in, and a lack of guidance and organization, so at least to continue their involvement. So I think that's where we can come in and help a bit.
So, Blue Sky and you, what are you doing?
Yeah, so we are looking to create more of a program for young people specifically to come in and do more volunteer work, to come in and do, you know, we're looking at potentially starting a fellowship program to work within the high schools directly, because a lot of political parties don't actually allow high school students to do that and be paid for their work. So we want people to come in and get the tools that they need so that they can go out and either create their own groups or join other groups and take these skills and really build these organizations up as much as they can.
This is the Paul Revere Show. I'm attorney Mark Thompson. I am here with Lauren Yoder. Our future, folks, our future, and one that is coming at us really quickly. We're going to be back on the other side of the break, and we're going to talk more in detail of, like, what can you do now as a young person to move the dime, and it sounds like have some baby boomers get out of the way. We'll be right back, folks. This is the Paul Revere Show. We are here this evening with Lauren Yoder. She works with Blue Sky, a nonpartisan organization in Waukesha that's geared to educate folks, get people involved publicly.
Yeah, civic engagement.
And we're talking about young people in particular, right? Yes. Ages 16, maybe 14 to 24, 25.
Yeah, roughly.
So what do you think young people are going to bring to the elections August, November, and 2024? What, in terms of, do you see a new energy? Do you see more intentionality? What do you think?
I guess I see more energy than I saw for sure in 2020, because 2020 seemed to, the goal was just general frustrations with the current administration, and let's move past that. That was kind of what we had been seeing. We're also in a pandemic, so it was a little more difficult to gauge that. But now, because we saw the highest youth voter turnout ever in 2018, and from everything I've been reading, but also what I've been seeing, is that we are supposed to have just about as high of a turnout, if not higher, of young people in this election. Which is absolutely incredible and is not something that should be ever taken for granted either. But I think for the most part, we really want to see a more progressive shift this year. Young people really want to see, they want to elect more progressive candidates. They want to elect younger candidates. They want candidates that are talking about things, but that also have a track record of doing things. So I think this year there is that intentionality, and especially around issues. You know, in Wisconsin, we know this year, this election, the right to an abortion is absolutely on the line. Right now we have elected officials who are trying their absolute hardest to protect that. We have a few who are trying that at the top. But we know that in this election cycle, all of that could go away. So that's something that I know a lot of organizations have really been organizing around, and young people have really been responding to. So if we're able to keep up with that, I think that we will see a very high turnout this year of a lot of very energetic young people turning out.
That's not pretty exciting. It's really exciting. You know, I would love to see it. We do need a statement made, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody has to show up and call people out, mm-hmm. I think. And this, it's interesting to me that young people, young women in particular, are like, what did you do with Roe v. Wade, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. I think a big part of that is the fact that for so many years we were told it was safe. We were told nothing was going to happen to it. It's completely fine. You know, we don't need to codify it. It's fine. It's fine. We can wait. And then it was just gone like that. And so there was this shock. You know, obviously when it was first leaked in May, there was the initial shock, and then there was a shock again when it actually happened in June. Yeah, I think that also plays into this election as well, though, that, you know, a lot of these elected officials were saying it's fine for so long, and now we're like, it was not fine. We need people who will actually do what you said you were going to do, which is why these primaries are so interesting and so important.
So where are young people communicating on these issues, right? I mean, you know, before we jumped on the show tonight, you were sort of talking about Facebook is really passé. So where are young people organizing on social media? And where should folks like me go look to find out what young people are thinking and how they're thinking?
Yeah, so a lot of organizing happens on Instagram. there's kind of this term for like an Instagram activist where you don't do much outside of the platform, but you share things, usually infographics from groups to your social media, hoping that your friends will see it. It's not the most impactful thing that you can do, but it usually helps to spread the message. People are also on Twitter a lot. Those conversations tend to be a bit less serious. They tend to be more jokes, but rooted in truth, rooted in how we're feeling and how we're thinking. And then the big one, which is really hard to tap into because it's all videos, is TikTok. That's where a lot gets shared. That's where a lot of information and, more importantly, a lot of misinformation gets shared. But that's where you can really gauge how people are feeling based on how they're interacting, what videos are going viral, which ones, you know, are then get moved to the other platforms. So I would say TikTok, but if you're trying to create content for young people to see, that may be the most difficult one. So maybe stay on Instagram.
Blue Sky, where's Blue Sky moving? Where are you
at?
Yeah,
if I was creative enough to do TikTok, I would be doing that. But I'm running our social media right now, and I am not creative enough to be making TikToks. So we do use Facebook. That's not the one that we use to target young people as much. But we use Instagram quite a bit. We created our account recently. And with that, we're just trying to engage as much as we can with as many people as we can. And we use Twitter quite a bit as well, because that's a very easy way just to get a message out quickly to people. So
So if people want to find you on Instagram or Twitter, where are they looking?
Yeah, for all of our platforms, we're just Blue Sky Waukesha. All one part of our username. So, yeah.
How do you see young people being engaged in the primary?
It's been interesting this year because usually I have friends in my non-political science friends who would come up to me and be like, there's an election going on. What are you talking about? I thought it wasn't until November. And in those cases, I had to explain the concept of primaries to a lot of people. But this year, so many people know about the primary candidates, especially for Senate. That's a big one because Ron Johnson has kind of made himself a target. And a lot of people are very excited to vote for the candidate that wins the nomination for the Democratic Party. But people are just, I don't know, I think that they're just really excited to turn out this year. They're really informed and they're ready to get out and vote.
That would just be like remarkable. How is Blue Sky tracking and organizing and getting people out on August 9th?
Yeah, so our website right now has a lot of resources on it. It's just been updated recently, and we take questions and stuff on there. I answer all of the questions from our social media accounts, and we have a lot of resources for the primary, for requesting your ballot, tracking it once you send it back in, which you should absolutely do, registering to vote, all the dates that are really important. That's all up on the website, and those are all things that we communicate with people about. I talk to people through our social media, and I talk to them in person at events as well, just making sure that they have the communication that they need.
Thank you so much, Lauren Yoder.
Thank you.
Folks, check out Blue Sky Waukesha. This is the Paul Revere Show. We will be back next Monday night. Thank you. Get involved, stay active, register to vote. You can only vote once each election, but register to vote and vote. Thank you all.
Always expect something extraordinary at Daily's Flair Bar in Craft Kitchen in Sun Prairie. Try Daily's gourmet bar food, homemade pasta, breads, and sauces, and owner Steve Daly's legendary cherry smoked ribs, plus Friday fish fry and Sunday brunch, just off Highway 19 and 151 in Sun Prairie. See the full menu at dailysbarandgrill.com. It's never off the truck at Daly's Flair Bar and Craft Kitchen in Sun Prairie.
And we're back. Hey, it's Noemi, the host of IPOS On Air. Tune in to IPOS On Air every Friday at 7 p.m., only on Devil Radio 92.7 FM. Join us to discuss our progress in creating the first project-based, student-directed, interdisciplinary climate justice high school course in the Madison School District. And hear from...